Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
7:02 this morning, Tuesday in Nashville. Corey Curtis in for Braden Gall along with Derek Mason. And we are having all sorts of entertaining Titans discussion here about who resonates with Titans fans and why. Because it's, I think it's tough for people to resonate, tough for players to resonate with fans. I always get to that jersey situation at Nissan Stadium. You still see the 27s.
Of course.
You still see the 9s.
The 89s.
And then the 89s. And those, you know, so you've got two that are retired. And I think if you're going to retire two, those are the two that need to be retired, 9 and 27. But then, you know, who are the fans' favorites after that in the 20 plus years of the Titans? Because, you know, you could say Derek Mason, you could say Frank Wycheck. I think Javon Kearse still resonates with the original Titan fan base. I think Javon Kearse still resonates hugely.
Keith Bullock.
To me, Keith Bullock is an all-pro player who, because he wasn't allowed to rush the passer at his position, just only made all-pro once. I mean, Keith Bullock was a hell of a football player.
And then he played in an era. The problem was he played in an era with a lot of other linebackers that were really good. They were able to do
He was an
some
outside linebacker. Well, no, it's not that it was
No,
he
not
do.
When I say he couldn't
he
mean
it. Utilized
they didn't
differences.
Exactly. Yes. They didn't let him do it.
He's the best pass-covering linebacker I've ever seen. And, you know, look, the Lawrence Taylors of the world and all those guys rushed the passer. And in the Titans' defense,
he didn't rush the passer.
He didn't rush the passer.
Yeah.
And so he would always be compared to guys who had 15 sacks, and there was no comparing that. It was apples and oranges. But so Keith Bullock was a great player for this team. Chris Johnson was a great player for this team. The duration was just really short.
Yeah, it was a short stint as far as his production.
He had like a 3-4 year window.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you know, that
but he
I think
did a lot in those 3 or 4 years.
He did. I mean, the first 2 years were unbelievable. But, you know, he was never able to get back to the playoffs after the first year.
Yeah.
And I always say your greatness is defined in January.
Yeah.
And so, like, for Derrick Henry, Derrick's always been a fan favorite because he played at Alabama. Even when Derrick was terrible for 2.5 years,
people loved him.
People loved him and said he was great. And we all know he wasn't great for 2.5 years. He's great now.
Yeah.
He is unbelievable now. But winning in New England, okay, and he was a huge part of
it. He was
winning.
The reason.
Yeah. I mean, he and the defense. That takes him to another level, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
In the history of this organization, that win is going to propel number 22 to a new level.
I think they will forever, unless, you know, he gets 190 yards against Baltimore and they win and they go on his historic run. But if it ends this upcoming week, no matter what happens moving forward, because I think Derek right now he knows how to be a pro.
Yes,
he knows how to run the football now.
Yes.
So from this point on, I think he's always going to be a good back. But they will always look at what he did against New England. Some people that don't follow the Titans quite closely, they will say, well, the New England game was the game that the light came on. No, that wasn't the game, but he showed it on the biggest stage, which is the playoffs.
And you know what's interesting is before the season, we all asked, what are we going to get? Are we going to get the end of the season, Derek? Or are we going to get the guy who was there for 2.5 years before the end of the season before, Derek? And I don't think we got either. I think
we got somebody different.
He's even better.
Yes.
I mean, because like, what does everybody talk about? They talk about his stiff arm. Has he done a stiff arm in the last 6 weeks?
I don't think he has.
You know what he does? He lowers his shoulder.
Just runs
people over. Exactly. He initiates contact. I mean, when I watched that New England game from the press box, and you know we generally sit end zone. Unfortunately, we don't get that 50-yard line seat like we do at Nissan Stadium. When you're on the road, you're generally kind of end zone-y. But you could see the surge that offensive line was giving him a lot of times. I mean, just powering forward, and then he'll hit that line and just thrust the whole thing forward. You know, when you pass the ball for 72 yards, you shouldn't be able to run for 200.
No.
Because you're putting no pressure on them defensively to take people off the line of scrimmage. And they still rush the ball for over 200 yards. That's pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, New England didn't have an answer for what they were doing. They tried eight men in a box. They couldn't do it. You know, they tried to, you know, blitz from different angles and get them stopped in the backfield. They couldn't do it. So I guess they was just, you know, it was almost they were at the mercy of the Tennessee Titans running the football. That's what they were at.
Now, we say that they scored 14 offensive points.
Yeah.
So that's not good enough.
No.
And so I'm going to ask you, with this Ravens squad that they're going to face, can they run for 150, 200 yards against this Ravens team?
I think they can. Will they do it? I don't know. That's yet to be seen. No one thought they would run the way they ran against New England. New England had one of the better run defenses in the National Football
League. I think they were giving up less than 100 yards a game.
Yeah, so can they, you know, put the pressure on the Baltimore Ravens and still run the football the way they have been running? I think they can run the football effectively. The problem is they got to put up points.
Yep. I think they got to score at least 28. Yeah,
here's the other problem. When you look at New England secondary, they're good. But they hide a lot. The only person they don't hide was Gilmore. He can do it by himself. The other guys, they sort of kind of hide. They hit those guys. Then Chung get hurt. They throw another guy. Baltimore has three flat-out guys they could just cover.
Yeah.
Jimmy Smith.
Humphreys.
Humphreys, who they consider the best. They consider him the best corner in the league. He's probably the second best corner in the league.
He's also a physical player.
Exactly. And then they got Peters. All these guys are 6'1" with long arms. They can run and they're physical. If the Titans couldn't get open from this past week, what makes you think they're going to be able to get open and get separation this week?
All right, real quickly, who finishes this game with more yards rushing, Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry?
That's a hard question, but it's true.
No,
it's a legit question.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right. Man, that's a tough one. I think Lamar ends up with more yardage.
So you think he's going to bust off a long one?
Yeah, because it's when the quarterback runs, there's an extra blocker.
Yeah,
and then he's faster than everybody on the field, other than maybe a Dory Jackson, and he's coming back from an ankle injury. He's faster than everybody on the field.
All right, 615-737-1025. We're taking your calls today on the firing of Peter LaViolette and about the Tennessee Titans gearing up for the Baltimore Ravens. Coach T is on the line. Coach T, what you got?
Man, happy holidays to you guys, man. Good morning. How you doing?
Great.
Good morning.
D Mays, baby, I'm taking your bet all the way to Vegas, man. You know, I'm going to give it up to you. Your game plan for holiday. You said, I don't care if the Titans got to give Henry the ball 190 times. Give it to him. And that's exactly what they did. They proved to be the best game plan. So my question is different. You know, you don't have Brady who can get out the pocket. You got Jackson who can run. I think Henry's going to put up more yards than Jackson only because he's going to get the ball more carries.
Volume.
The question is, can the Titans slow down the wideouts and can they hold off the pressure, you know, getting to Tannehill so we can have a tough game and maybe eke another one out? That's the question I'm going to have on the map.
Well, and thank you for the question, Coach T, and thanks for the call. You're right. This offensive line will be tested when they throw the football because their defensive coordinator, the Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator, brings blitzes from everywhere because he trusts the guys outside. He trusts the guys outside that can cover one man-to-man. And he allows those guys to be on islands. And then he designs his blitzes where you think it's man-to-man, and it's not. So he's sort of like Dean Pease in that respect. Can the Titans throw the football? Can Baltimore slow down their receivers? I think they can. Now, on the flip side, will the Titans be able to get the pressure? To me, it's not about getting pressure with Lamar Jackson, because when you get pressure, that might be a bad thing for you. Because then he escapes,
yep.
And no one's there to tackle him. I think they just contain him. You contain him and force him to throw it.
Keeping him in the pocket.
Exactly.
And look, he is throwing from the pocket well.
Absolutely.
He had 36 touchdowns. But you would rather have that than having him escape the pocket and playing backyard football, because then you're at his mercy.
Yeah.
You're in his wheelhouse at that point.
I think what happens is, I think early on, you can't – don't look at what happens early in the game.
I don't think the Titans are going to blitz.
Yeah.
At all.
But don't look at what happens in the first quarter, because what happens in the first quarter, both teams are filling one another out.
Mm.
I think it's second and beyond that you start to look at, because then things settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And the Titans might stop Lamar Jackson in the first quarter. He might end up the first quarter with 5 yards rushing. It's not about the first quarter. It's about now, when guys are tired and things are settled in,
mm-hmm.
the nerves are gone. What do you do as the defense then? Because Roman's going to have a counterpunch. You just got to be able to be ready for whatever that counterpunch is. And I believe in Dean Pease that he can be. It's not the fact, can he, does he have the personnel to do it? With Jayon Brown being down now, you know, does he have the personnel to go out there and do the necessary things to stop Lamar Jackson for the whole game?
All right. Well, we will talk more Tennessee Titans, and we will talk more Nashville Predators and Peter Laviolette coming up in the rest of the show. It is 7:13. We're going till 10 o'clock this morning, and then they've got the Three Amigos in the afternoon. You are listening to The Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I'll tell you this, the whole to-be-announced thing for the head coach, that has the hockey world buzzing tonight. There's, like, some big games up in Canada tonight, Montreal, Winnipeg, and Toronto, Edmonton, and everybody is loving this, like, TVA thing, all the guesses going around. It certainly created some buzz. There's no question about that.
Elliot Friedman talking about the Nashville Predators and the mystery of who leads them the rest of the way this year and possibly beyond. With Peter Laviolette out, who is the interim or the new head coach of the Nashville Predators? There are, you know, several assistants on the bench. Dan Lambert being one. Coach Muse the other. There's the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, be another possibility. Other names being tossed around, guys like John Hines, former head coach of the New Jersey Devils. And then, of course, there's also Phil Housley. I believe now he is an assistant with the Arizona Coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you can tab a guy from another staff to come in and be your head coach. I don't know the rules on
the
that.
Rules of engagement for hockey.
I don't know. You know, maybe when we have Robbie Stanley on, we can ask him if that's even legal.
Yeah,
at this point, there
are several guys that are candidates, I guess, around the league. Mike Babcock, who has had success with Detroit and Toronto,
he's won a few games.
Absolutely, Dale Hunter, Peter DeBoer. There are guys that
Peter
are
DeBoer.
On this list. That could potentially, you know, be the head coach for the Nashville Predators. The good thing about this is that you do it early enough, which means at the halfway season, where you get to truly evaluate the interim. And then you get to look around and you get to sort of, you know, behind the scenes interview in a sense, or get a sense of what these other coaches are about, what their systems are about. Does their system that you know of fits what you want to do. So you have the rest of the season, and then you have part of the off season to figure out what we're going to do as far as, are we going to keep the interim coach, whoever it is, or are we going to choose to look outside and bring one of these other guys in?
Now, you were never a part of a coaching change.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, you were?
Uh-huh.
Okay, where?
Mm-hmm. In Baltimore.
In Baltimore, okay.
Yeah, at first, the offensive coordinator, they fired, why am I forgetting his name
but,
now?
But not a head coaching change.
Yeah, well, they fired Bill Billick.
You played under Billick?
Okay. Yeah, they fired Brian Billick, and they brought in John Harbaugh.
Okay.
So I was a part of that whole regime change.
Okay, so having been a part of a regime change, it may not have been in season, but it's still part of a regime change. What is going on inside that Preds locker room right now?
There's a sense of, you know, guys are unsure, but, you know, maybe it's a little bit different from this aspect. You know, when they fired Brian, it was at the end of the season.
Yeah,
so guys kind of went on their way. It now, these guys still got to play. So what this can do, like it did the Blues, it can galvanize these guys, and it's us against them. It's just us. It's not even a coaching staff. It's not even Poyle. It's us now. We got to get it done, because if we don't get it done, no one else will. They didn't believe in our head coach, and if we don't get it done, they ain't going to believe in some of us. So
okay,
we got to rally around one
another.
They
didn't believe in our head coach. Is there a sense of responsibility of we got Lavi fired? We're better than this.
I think there are some guys, that believe, had we played better, Lavi would still be here. I tell you, one of those guys that doesn't think that way probably is Turris. Turris is probably like, you know what? Hey, fine. Good riddance.
Clean slate.
Exactly. He gets a clean slate. But there are guys in that locker room that believe, and I believe it's the veteran guys, the leaders on the team, that had we played better, Lavi would still be here.
Now, okay, also in that locker room right now, are guys scared's not the right word. Are they unsure about the future? Are they wondering who's coming in? Are they leery of who's coming in? I mean, these would all seem to be natural reactions.
Yeah, because in the world of sports, I guess it's business, period. When there's a regime change, whether it's a CEO, president, GM, it doesn't matter across business. There's always some that are on high alert, and then there are some that say, I've done my job and I've done it well. So I don't foresee.
I'm just going to keep playing.
I'm going to keep doing what
I do. Look, Roman Yossi's
he's not worried about it.
Yeah.
Duchesne's not worried about it. Johansson is not worried about it. Okay. Those guys, I'm just saying those three guys, they're not worried.
But like guys like Austin Watson, Colton Sissons, Rocco Grimaldi.
Even Pecorine.
Okay.
Even Pecorine needs to, he's probably like, because Lavi loved Pecorine, and rightfully so.
Look, Pecorine's jersey is going to be the first one up in the rafters. The entire city loves Pecorine. Mm-hmm. David Poyle loves Pecorine.
Absolutely.
And I think that's most important.
Yeah, but when a new coach comes in, if you hire this guy, you got to allow him to do what he does. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't want, if he thinks,
he needs to go a different way. I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
But you think that Lavi split the locker room with the way he handled Kyle Turris. New coach comes in and turns his back on Pecorine. You don't think that splits the locker room?
I think guys would understand it better. They would understand that, okay, Pekka's he's older. He only has 1 year left on a contract, if that, I think. He has one more year after this, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. Guys will look at that a little bit different. Or if the new guy coming in says, you know what, we're going to keep Rene because he is the cornerstone of this team, of this organization, but he's not going to be our starter. I think that more than anything, that's probably the thing that will happen. If Pekka doesn't retire and you want him to retire as a Predator, what do you say? Well, we're going to play the next season out, but you're not going to be our starter. But then who becomes the starter?
Yeah.
Is it Soros, or did this new coach choose to go outside and say, we got to get somebody in the mold of a Pecorine?
Well, it's not his choice. It's David Poyle's choice. It's David Poyle's choice. And I think everybody feels like UC Soros is the future. But I don't know. And look, I could be in the minority. I haven't seen anything that tells me this year that UC Soros is head and shoulders above Pecorine at this point in their careers. I watched UC Soros give up 4 goals. And then lose in the shootout to Anaheim the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and look, I the defense is just as bad for him as it is
Pecorine.
For Pecorine right now. It was interesting because we had on Adam Vingan when I filled in last time, and he talked about how the Preds were struggling with goaltending. And I told you, I said, it's surprising to me that he pinned it all on goaltending because I think there's a lot of other things that are wrong with this hockey team. And David Poyle agreed and fired the head coach. And we're talking about goaltending right now. You know what? Both goalies will be just fine if they play some defense.
Yeah, if you play defense in front of them.
If you clear some guys out from the front of the net, if you put a body
easier
on some people, you hit somebody.
But I think the unique situation, because in football, that's what happens. When a new coach comes in, you know, there are a handful of guys that are not worried. They're just, listen, I've been an all-pro guy or a Pro Bowl guy or a staple of this. I'm not going anywhere. I just keep doing my job the way I'm doing it and buy into what the new coach is preaching. So it's different in that respect because these are not guaranteed contracts in the NFL. So if a new coach comes in and say, hey, listen, I can't, this guy's been here for 8 years, but he's not what I want at that position. I can make the change and bring someone else in. I could just release him. I don't have to trade him. With the Nashville Predators or with hockey in general, these contracts are guaranteed. So, a lot of times you may want to change somebody, but you just can't because you have nobody to – you don't have a trade partner. Mm-hmm. You just can't release the guy. So maybe that's the saving grace for someone that may be teetering, on whether they believe they're on the team or not. But if that is indeed the case, then all these guys got to buy in and all these guys got to play better because if these contracts are guaranteed, this team is not changing much.
No, you're absolutely right. That's the danger of guaranteed. Yeah. It's what makes the NFL different from just about everybody. Now, Marquise, yesterday, Jared and the GM had on Chris Mason after the firing. And, we talked a lot about are you surprised? Because we're not surprised. Floyd said he and Jared were surprised. They asked Chris Mason that very question about the timing of the change and it coming after the Preds picked up 3 points on the road after the Winter Classic and the decision to make it after getting 3 out of 4 points. It's Chris Mason. It was yesterday. I'm hanging Marquise out to dry because I should have talked to him about this before the break. So this is my bad. This is my bad. But we will get that shortly. But it is surprising that it comes after getting out of 3 or 4 points. But again, we've talked about the decision was probably made before then because, it is giving up 3 goals in Anaheim in the second period. Is that the last straw? I don't think so.
The straw that broke the camel's back.
Because we've seen that all year long. Mm-hmm. We've seen that all year long. All right. It is 7:28 this morning. We have more Titans and more Nashville Predators talk to come here on The Morning Drive. Corey Curtis filling in for Braden Gall this morning, sitting alongside my main man, Derek Mason, the greatest football player that has ever graced this earth, or at least for the next 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I know it's a business, and obviously this team is in a position where they have certain expectations, and I guess, decisions were made up top that the way things have been going lately, and maybe this season that they felt it was best to make a change. It's a tough situation. I personally didn't know or think that they would do it after they got 3 points after the Winter Classic, but I guess, that's way above my pay grade. So they felt they needed a change and maybe a different voice in the room.
Chris Mason, he'll be on the call tonight, right, on the TV version. As the Nashville Predators take on the Boston Bruins tonight. Of course, you'll hear the radio call right here on 102.5 The Game with Pete Weber and Hal Gill. The first game after the Peter Laviolette era. We'll find out at 11:45 what era starts tonight. And I really have no clue. I mean, like if you said, Corey, you got 100 chips on the table, which pile where are you going to push your pile? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think only people that know right now is the team and, and Poyle. Those are the only people that know where this team is going as far as who are they going to put in that seat until, either they make a decision on someone outside or, whether it's a guy that's already on that staff. I listen to C. Mason and he understands this game much. He understands this game much better than I do and more in depth than I do. But I don't think they made the decision or they were waiting to make the decision and anything was based upon them getting 3 points, 4 points, no point. I think Poyle was he had come to a decision before this.
Yeah, so you, even if they beat the Ducks 4-0,
I think he's still going to make the change.
Okay.
Because I think if these things are not Poyo doesn't seem like a guy that would just walk in and say, you know what, we're making a change.
Mm-hmm.
Out goes the old, in with the new. He doesn't seem like he's that type of guy. He seemed more calculated.
No, he's not a pull the trigger
guy. He seems like he's going to weigh the pros and the cons. How does this further better the organization if we do this? Because you got to understand, they've only had two head coaches in their 20-plus years of existence. That's phenomenal. So he's all about stability.
Mm-hmm.
He wants that guy to be in that seat for a long period of time. And when he makes a decision like that, he doesn't make it lightly. He thinks about it for a very long time. And then he makes the decision. I truly believe this. This was a beginning of the year thing.
Oh, yeah.
He was thinking about this
when the
season ended last year.
I was thinking about it. I mean, we were all, because look, if they weren't, and they started the year a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
and we were like, all right, this Matt Duchene thing is working out. But then you had all those games where they were giving up 4, 5, and 6 goals, mm-hmm. and you started saying, this has got to get fixed.
Yeah.
And it's not fixed. So, Mace, no matter who comes in, what's the number one thing that coach has to do to get the respect of the guys in the room to finish the season? Because that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. Whoever it is has to get the respect of those guys and get them all pointed in the same direction.
I think the first thing he has to do, if obviously it's going to be somebody within the organization, and typically when you're an assistant coach, everybody loves you. Everybody loves you when you're the assistant.
Yeah, you're
coach.
Not the heavy.
Yeah, you're not the guy that's really making all of the decisions on rosters and
playing
this and
time.
That. Exactly.
Yeah.
So everybody, you know, loves you. But then when you become the man, it changes. Whoever they do put in that seat, he has to. There's a fine line. I don't think he can go overboard, but I don't think he can continue to be the position coach. I think he has to be somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He has to really have a plan. When he gets in that seat, and it might not be this game, but when he gets in that seat, he has to have a plan on what I'm going to do, the lines I'm going to start off with. And there's going to be a little bit, he got to be honest with the guys. That's what he has to do. Hey, listen, you guys are not playing well. There might be some changes in the line. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not promising anyone anything. If you play hard,
you'll play.
I will play you.
Yep.
Point blank.
You
no
produce.
Favorites, no yep. nothing. That's what he has to do. He has to come in mm-hmm. and just be honest with these guys. If he comes in and it's kind of like he's kind of straddling the fence, guys are going to tune out very quickly. If he comes in and he's honest with guys, listen, you're not playing well. You're not playing well. There might be some line shifts here and there, but I'm just trying to get the best unit on the ice. If you play hard, you play physical, and you play with an edge, you will play. I don't care who you are. Now, we got our guys, Yossi, Johansson, Duchene, guys like that, they're going to play. But you other guys, if you play hard, I'm going to play you.
Now,
there's no favorites.
Now, does Poyle address the team, and does he address the team by saying, look, head coach is out, new head coach is in. He's not going anywhere the rest of the year, mm-hmm. all right? So if he's not going anywhere the rest of the year, guess who is if we don't get things worked out?
Yeah.
All right? So I'm not afraid to make moves. We're right up against the salary cap, and we're not in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? If this team isn't good enough to make the playoffs, we got to make changes. So if you guys don't want to be out, I recommend you start winning some games.
Yeah, and I think the guys realize that.
So you don't think they need to hear that?
I don't think they necessarily need to hear that.
They know they're the next shoe to drop.
They know that they've done this to the head coach. They will trade you off just as quick as they did the head coach. David has to do is the message has to be the same across the board. There can't be this, Poyo's saying something and the head coach is saying something different.
I agree completely with that.
There has to be a message from Poyo to the head coach to the assistant coaches to the players. There needs to be no deviation from it.
Yep.
I think there was some deviation from Poyo to Lobby to the assistants.
Well, I think the Kyle Turris situation really kind of exemplified that.
Mm-hmm. So I think the message, what Peter's going to say is what the head coach should be saying, and then what the head coach is saying should be uttered to the assistants and so forth and so on. The message can't be different. It can't be this, you hate what they did to Lobby, but it can't be this, well, I'm not going to, because Lobby, no. The message has to be the same. You have to buy in to whatever this interim coach has for you. You got to buy into what Poyo has for this organization. If you don't buy in, then it's like, okay, what do we do? We got to finish off the season with you. But after that, then we're going to have to reevaluate, how we move forward. But I think those guys will. I think those guys want to get better. I think those guys want to be coached hard. I think they want to go out there and do the things necessary to turn this season around. Because to me, all of that would have been for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The Duchesne, bringing in Duchesne, giving contracts
trading
to guys. Exactly.
Yep.
Firing Lobby in the middle of the season. All of that is for nothing if you can't somehow, some way. I'm not saying that you need to go to the, Stanley Cup, but your second half must be much better than your first half.
You got to look different.
Exactly.
You got to look different. All right. 7:40 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis filling in for Braden Gall alongside with Derek Mason. The Tennessee Titans are on to round two of the NFL playoffs, the divisional round. I just think it's so much easier to say round two.
Yeah.
So much easier. We have seen what I consider to be an interesting development in the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
and that is Marcus Mariota getting on the field during meaningful minutes of the game. Not for a lot of plays, just a couple of plays, but when we return on the other side of this next break, I want to talk about what they're doing and why they're doing it. Because I didn't expect this. Did you expect this?
No, I didn't expect them to, have Marcus in playing. Honestly, I really didn't.
I mean, because he's been in the game during meaningful moments. I mean, this isn't coming in the fourth quarter and taking a knee or handing it off. He's been in the first half of the last two games. Must-win games mm-hmm. for the Tennessee Titans. So I want us to try to figure out what's going on in the mind of Mike Vrabel and company with what they're doing. And we're not saying you're crazy for playing Marcus Mariota, but obviously Ryan Tannehill has played extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's got to be a method to this madness. There's got to be an idea behind it. I think I have my own theory,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to float that. You can tell me I'm stupid because that's kind of what I am, but we will certainly figure it out. Corey Curtis sitting alongside Derek Mason on the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Man, listeners, check this out, because I've been telling you this for over a year and a half now. By my good friends over at Cool Springs MD, over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, his wife Daphne, along with that wonderful and experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men in the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, that I'm in, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune system. It is flu season, guys, so we got to get our immune systems up. Energy levels. I wake up at 4:30 in the morning, so my energy levels need to be high, and I need more than just coffee. Cognitive functions and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And there's no better time now to achieve a healthy lifestyle. What are you waiting on, man? Pick up that phone. Give Cool Springs a call today. Make an appointment, and this is how you make that appointment. Here's the number, 615-486-3458, 615-486-3458, or visit the website. That's coolspringsmd.com.
7:45 in Nashville, Tennessee. Corey Curtis alongside Derek Mason on ESPN's 102.5 The Game. Peter Laviolette out as head coach of the Nashville Predators. In 4 hours, David Poyle, I'm assuming, will reveal who will lead this team for the rest of the season. If you want to weigh in on the decision to fire him or who you think is next, give us a call at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Mace, before we left, I brought up the role of Marcus Mariota. Obviously was the team starting quarterback for a long time, was replaced after week six by Ryan Tannehill, who's had a great year. And then in Houston, Titans offense is going, it's moving, and all of a sudden we look, and there's the Ocho in the shotgun, and he throws a strike to A.J. Brown for a big gain.
Mm-hmm.
Comes right off the field. Later in the game, comes in, I think it was a read option, and he handed off to Derrick Henry. Well, they're in a playoff game in New England. I mean, in a playoff game, in meaningful time. And I look, there's the Ocho on the field. In the first, Tannehill's off. The Ocho's on. And he's throwing the ball. He's not just handed off, he's throwing the ball. It's Michael Pruitt for, I think, a four-yard gain.
Mm-hmm.
Leading receiver in Southern Illinois history. Later in the game, he's in the game for a handoff. And bigger than that, after Derrick Henry took that screen pass in the two-minute offense and ran out of bounds at the one, Marcus Mariota was on the field for the snap at the one-yard line. They stopped play to review the Derrick Henry screen pass to see if he scored or not, and at that point he came off and Ryan Tannehill came on. But he was going to take the snap at the one-yard line. So this is not just, hey, let's do the guy a solid. This is not just, hey, go out there and run out the clock. He's getting put on the field during meaningful time, whether it be for one snap or two or five. He is getting on the field during meaningful times. Why do you think Mike Vrabel, Arthur Smith and company are doing it?
I think at this point of the season, you have to give defenses more to prepare for. And Marcus gives you the ability. Both of their quarterbacks can run, but Tannehill can't run like Marcus. That's just a fact.
We can't run the read option.
Exactly. Can't run the read option.
He can run it, but he can't run it like Marcus.
Exactly. But Marcus gives you that ability to not only run, but throw the ball off the read option. They haven't done that with Tannehill. I don't think they feel comfortable with doing that with Tannehill.
Look, I'm not as well versed in RPOs as everybody, but they haven't done a lot of RPO
exactly.
with Ryan Tannehill.
Absolutely.
They've done play action and play action and more play action.
Yeah, so it just gives, I think what it does, it gives the defense more to think about. Because now it's sort of like the Lamar Jackson thing. I got to cover both of these guys now as a defense because he can give it to Derrick Henry or he can run it himself, meaning Marcus. I don't think, even though Ryan Tannehill can run, I don't think people fear him running the football.
They fear him throwing it 60
exactly.
yards more.
Absolutely. He's not going to. Marcus can beat you running the football.
He has won games with his legs.
Exactly. So that gives, now you got to play 52 wide. Instead of just 100 long, 120 long.
The field is 52 yards wide.
Exactly. So now you got to play from sideline to sideline when Marcus is in the game. But they still have the ability to throw the football with him. So it just gives you more. It gives the defense more to think about. Because I guarantee you the Baltimore Ravens, they have, I know how these practices go. What's happening is, they got the scout team in there and they're running. They're playing Tannehill. They're running. And then all of a sudden John says, special play. And then, RG runs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally different from what they were doing, we're preparing for Ryan Tannehill. Now they quickly switch in practice to a different mode. And they're trying to simulate Marcus being in a game. How do we adjust as a defense?
Is it somewhat, because it's not the same, but is it somewhat like the Saints with Taysom Hill?
Yes, exactly. Because, like you said, it's not the same because Drew Brees doesn't run the football. But when
Taysom Hill's kind of a tank.
You bring Hill in the game, now all of a sudden the defense has to switch.
What's he going
to
do?
And you have to have a call ready.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever Baltimore's doing when they quickly make that switch in practice from whoever's playing Ryan to whoever's playing Marcus, they got to have a call. And that's what Mike Vrabel, you know, want them to prepare for. He want to make sure they are preparing for if Marcus just comes in the game very quickly without notice.
All right. I don't disagree with any of that. Mm-hmm. I think that is all very well thought out, and I think very well could be the 100% reason. But I have another thought as to why I think they're doing it. Marcus Mariota is not Blaine Gabbert.
No.
Marcus Mariota has one playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Mariota's won a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people believe that he hasn't completed a pass in his career, but he's thrown a lot of really good footballs in his career. He struggled at the beginning of the season, obviously, but he's made a lot of good throws, and he's won a lot of meaningful games for this team. My point is this. If Ryan Tannehill gets hurt, they need to be able to win with Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
And I think they still believe they can win playoff games with Marcus Mariota if he's playing well. And I think part of this is keeping him mentally engaged and ready to play.
Yeah.
To say, Marcus, you are going to play in this game. I don't know how many snaps it's going to be, but you have to be ready because you are going to play. Because he, look, that snap didn't catch him by surprise.
No.
Going in at the one doesn't catch him by surprise. Mm-hmm. They're working on this
in practice. Yeah.
So he knows all week in practice. I mean, nobody warmed up. Okay, I saw immediately.
Mm-hmm.
This was crazy. Saturday night, I'm at the stadium. He's the first one on the field,
mm-hmm.
Mariota. And he is working hard. I mean, he is working hard, running a lot of bootleg stuff and a lot of motion stuff and a lot of misdirection. I mean, he is out there working, and I'm like, this isn't normal.
Mm-hmm.
He's working on stuff. And so they're working on stuff.
Well, he has a package.
They've given him a package.
Yeah.
They've given him stuff. And so now he goes into games
mm-hmm.
mentally charged with, I'm going to play. I have to 100% be ready. And so if Tannehill gets hurt, you feel a lot better about his engagement mm-hmm. in this football game, don't you?
Yeah. Here's the worst case scenario, not for the Tennessee Titans, but for the Baltimore Ravens. And people might think I'm crazy. Worst case scenario is for Baltimore is that Ryan Tannehill goes down and Marcus got to come in the game for mm-hmm. 2-3 quarters. You haven't prepared for Marcus.
No. Nope.
Not one bit. And people might look at it, Titan fans might look at it and say, oh, my goodness, Marcus is back in the game. But that's an advantage for you.
Well, listen, along those lines, every time the Titans played the Jaguars,
mm-hmm.
I always thought that Mariota's legs were the X factor
mm-hmm.
and where the Titans needed to win those games because they were so strong up front. I always felt like Marcus's ability to run the ball was what was going to be able to separate them, and it quite often was
yes.
in those matchups. And for whatever reason, they got away from it this last year when mm-hmm. they went to Jacksonville. They decided they were going to be a passing team, and that one didn't go so well. And they're still best when they throw the ball 20 times a game.
Yeah,
and I know people think that they're, you know, throwing the ball 40 times a game. They're not, and they're certainly not winning.
They average 23 passes per game. That's where they need to stay.
And I'll bet when they win, the number's lower than that.
Yeah,
I'll bet
it could be
because all of their losses, the passing numbers are much higher.
Yeah, when Ryan Tannehill is throwing the football, that means they have to come back.
Yep.
To win games, and you don't want that to be the case.
Nope, and they generally hasn't been good enough to take them back to do it.
Yeah, they did it one time. I mean, they've done it a few times. Yep. Kansas City game, Charger game, yes. But even those games, honestly, yep. should have lost, but they won them.
They should have lost the Chargers.
Exactly.
But they didn't.
They won. Defensively. Absolutely.
Against Kansas City, Derrick Henry did rush for 180-something yeah. yards. But you know, I agree with you. Look, optimally for the Titans, you mm-hmm. want Tannehill to go out there and you
of
want
course.
Him to sling it. But mm-hmm. you brought up earlier who their DBs were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys are all first-round picks.
Exactly.
Earl Thomas, Marlon Humphreys, Peters.
Smith.
I mean, these guys are all first-round picks.
Yeah.
And they're all really good. Look, there was no separation against New England.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you can have much expectation for there to be any more separation in this game. So if you can't throw the ball, Mm-hmm. What are you going to have to do?
You have to run it.
Okay. So who are you better off running with? And I'm not advocating changing the quarterbacks. I'm saying along your along your logic, how that could be kind of a tough situation for the Ravens if all of a sudden the Titans roll out a quarterback and they're running read option on you.
Yeah, because you haven't completely prepared for it. And under just about every scenario, the Titans want Ryan Tannehill underneath center, and rightfully so. He should be the guy underneath center leading.
Yeah,
to the
playoffs. He's done everything
exactly.
to be that guy.
So I'm not advocating for Marcus in no way and no how. But
if we're
he
talking
that,
about why he's on the field,
absolutely,
and I think we both expect him to get on the field
exactly
in this game.
I expect him to see at least 3 to 5 plays.
So you think even more? You think it grows?
Yeah, I think it grows because I think what they want to do. Is you know, keep Baltimore off balance. Because even with 180-something yards, they only ran for one touchdown.
Well, they scored 14 points.
They scored 14 points. Even with all those yardage, they only scored 14 points, which means they got to find another way to get into the end zone once they get into the red zone.
Okay.
They got to have different ways to get inside the end zone.
Along those lines, Jonnu Smith didn't catch a single pass in that football game. Now, Anthony Firkser caught 2 at the tight end position, and I think Michael Pruitt caught 1 or 2. But if the corners are all locking down your receivers, how can your tight ends not be a bigger part of your offense?
That it's unbelievable.
I mean, weren't you surprised by that?
I was surprised they were not able to get, especially when Chong went out. Now, granted, they were running football very well, so they didn't see no need to throw it to the tight ends.
But look, we've seen Jonnu is an explosive player.
Exactly.
You're like, here, Jonnu, take the ball. Go do something with it.
But I think it's what you said, and I think you said it off air. They didn't want their up. They wanted this to be a muck game.
They didn't fear the Patriots' offense.
They didn't want to mess it up in any way.
Yeah.
And they didn't. I think they still believe, even though Tannehill's the guy, they still believe the way they're going to win is if he turns around and get a ball to Derrick Henry.
Well, look, he almost had 3 turnovers. He only threw the ball 15 times, and he almost had 3 turnovers in the game.
Yeah, so to me, I think they still believe the only way they're going to win, Derrick Henry's had 64 rushes in 2 games.
Yeah, he's got to be
gonna tired. He's going to have another 30 in this game versus the Baltimore Ravens if the game stays close.
They can't throw it 15 times and win. Look, as a Chicago Bears fan, you cannot hide from your quarterback and win meaningful games, okay? The Bears tried to hide from Rex Grossman in the Super Bowl, and they lost that game, okay? Yeah. Ryan Tannehill has been great all year. They just need to trust him and just play football.
I don't think they trust him that much now going into the playoffs. Playoffs is something different.
So you think in the postseason their opinion of him – You just don't think the trust factor, as much as we think it's there, you still don't think it's completely there. I think that's a very interesting point.
I think in their minds, everybody in that organization believes that they're going to win.
It's 22.
22.
Well, I think it starts there without question. Mm-hmm. Without question. All right. We're approaching the 8 o'clock hour here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got more Preds talk, the ousting of Peter Laviolette, more Titans talk, Round 2 of the NFL playoffs, and more coming up. Corey Curtis with Derek Mason, The Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.